I'm Vijay Hamilton, and welcome to the Autoimmune Reset, the place for you to learn how to thrive with autoimmune disease and feel empowered to take steps to transform your health to feel better than ever. You can start making changes today to improve your health. So with every episode, my mission is to share with you simple ways to uplevel your diet and lifestyle with key learnings from my own journey reversing autoimmune disease and inspirational stories from those who have reset their autoimmune symptoms and are now thriving in life. I suffered from autoimmune disease for over 25 years and now I live symptom-free, and I wish the same for you as well. So thank you for being here and sharing this time with me. Now let's get started. Hello and welcome to the Autoimmune Reset podcast. My name is Vijay Hamilton. I'm a nutritionist, scientist and expert in autoimmune disease. And today we're going to be talking about SIBO. So that's small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, and it's linked with autoimmune disease. So we're going to be talking about the condition, the causes of the condition, what you can do to help the condition, but also its link with autoimmunity, because I work with lots and lots of clients who have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or they're having lots of symptoms related to the gut and lots of bloating. They may not have a SIBO diagnosis, but they are experiencing those symptoms, and they also have an autoimmune disease. So there's certainly a link there, and that's what I'd like to talk to you about today, because recently I was at a conference and somebody asked me, is SIBO real? Which I thought was an interesting question and definitely worth exploring. So I thought I'll have to come on the podcast and talk about it. So that's what we're talking about today. And actually, I see it commonly in my clinic, so it's worth talking about because you might be experiencing these symptoms and not sure what to do. So that's why we are focusing on it today. So let's talk about what SIBO is. SIBO is a condition where the bacteria that would ordinarily be lower down in the gut, so in the colon, have been able to make their way into the small intestine. And what can happen is when we eat certain foods, they create a gas that can cause that feeling of bloating, but it can also lead to inflammation as well. And we will be talking a bit more about what causes SIBO in a moment, but there is a lot of skepticism around SIBO, around the way it's diagnosed, but actually, is it a real condition? Because it's also linked to irritable bowel syndrome, which again, there's a lot of debate around that diagnosis and what it actually means. And the truth is, if you have an IBS diagnosis, you need to go that one step further to understand what the root cause of your IBS is. And that's where the stool testing that I offer in my clinic can be really insightful. And unfortunately, the testing that you get through your doctors doesn't quite go into the detail that you need to understand what might be at the root of your IBS. So as I mentioned at the beginning, some of the symptoms of SIBO include bloating, abdominal pain and discomfort. You might have excessive gas, diarrhea. And in some cases, which I have seen a fair amount, is unintentional weight loss and just an inability to put on weight. It becomes more of an issue, I would say, as we age, because we want to keep our body strong. We want to keep our muscle mass and our bone density. And that can be affected when we have SIBO. Now, because the healthy bacteria that we would expect to find in the gastrointestinal tract has kind of moved to the wrong place, what can happen is the normal process that will occur when we eat certain foods, especially these foods that are high in fructooligosaccharides, such as onions, garlic and wheat, and then fruits like apples and pears, can exacerbate symptoms due to the fermentable nature of those foods. But the truth is that is an ordinary process. It becomes an issue because the bacteria is in the wrong place, and it can be very, very painful. So if you do notice that you're getting a lot of bloating after eating those types of foods, then it might be a sign of SIBO rather than a food sensitivity, because I think when you have an autoimmune condition or you have chronic symptoms, ordinarily we're thinking about food sensitivities, or certainly I used to be thinking more about food sensitivities. But the truth is, if you have this process going on in the body where you're creating a lot of gas in the small intestine, that's going to affect the absorption of key nutrients, but it can also stimulate inflammation. The thing about SIBO is that there can be some other things going on. It might not just be a case that the bacteria has resided in the wrong place in the gut. There can also be the impact of your gallbladder and having low stomach acid and also low pancreatic enzymes. So these are all different areas that need to be considered if you're having those symptoms of SIBO. Either one of these or all of them can create an environment for those bacteria to be able to thrive in the small intestine. So it could be that you have a gallbladder issue with those types of symptoms, or you have low stomach acid, or you have low pancreatic enzymes and there's something going on with the pancreas. And that in and of itself could be the issue, or it could be that the fact that there are issues in those systems that are contributing to SIBO. And understanding what it is for you is absolutely vital, so that you can address it, because you might be taking the wrong approach when it comes to your nutrition and your diet and your lifestyle choices, or even supplements that you're taking, if you don't know the underlying root cause. And that's something that you can explore yourself, but you can also explore that with testing or working with a functional medicine practitioner or nutritionist like me. The stomach acid issue is something that I see a lot, and I often get my clients to do the bicarbonate of soda test, which you can look into, and I'm sure if you do a Google search you will find the directions for doing that test. It's certainly not a diagnostic test, but it's going to give you a good indication of whether your stomach acid is low, because our stomach acid is there to clean the bacteria off the food that we are eating. And if that process isn't working optimally, then it means that that bacteria that we'd hoped to clean off our food or clean out of the small intestine is able to stay in the small intestine, because there's two parts to this. It can either be the fact that we're being more exposed to bacteria, for example, as a response to having low stomach acid, and it's not moving through the, well, it's able to move through the gut into the small intestine and stay there. Or it can be to do with the valve that isn't closing in the small intestine and it's letting bacteria back up into the small intestine. So it can be either or it can be both. But it's certainly worth checking if your stomach acid is low, because that can be a factor when it comes to SIBO. There is something called Helicobacter pylori, H. pylori, that can cause your stomach acid to be low. So it's worth checking whether you have that bacteria in your gut and it's in your stomach, because that can lower stomach acid. So if you find that you do have low stomach acid and you're not sure why, there can be various reasons for that. And again, that might be worth exploring. But one of the things can be when we have H. pylori present in the stomach. But it can also be to do with nutrient deficiencies. In particular, zinc is absolutely key for our stomach acid production. So if we're low in zinc, it may mean that we're low in stomach acid as well. So if you have these symptoms, how do you go about being diagnosed? And when I'm working with clients with these symptoms and they have been to see their doctor about it and they've already kind of reviewed and had an analysis by their doctor, I often will just recommend doing a stool test, because I find that by doing the stool test, you get a lot of insight into the different types of bacteria that are in the gut and whether there is any overgrowth or dysbiosis there. Because when somebody has SIBO, they are more likely to have an overgrowth of unhelpful bacteria or just an imbalance of gut bacteria. And that stool test can give us that insight. But on top of that, you can do a breath test where you will consume a substrate, and then there will be breath samples taken after consuming that, and the gases are measured to determine whether you have that bacterial fermentation, which is linked to SIBO, and then you're going to get a better understanding of whether that is happening in your gut at the moment. And there are two types of gases that are ordinarily tested for, which is methane and hydrogen. And the reason that's important is because when you know what type of SIBO you have, the therapeutic treatment will be different dependent on that. And when it comes to symptoms, methane dominant SIBO tends to be more constipation and slower transit time. And when it's more of the hydrogen dominant SIBO, it's more diarrhea and a faster transit time. So again, symptoms can be different depending on what type of gas you're producing when it comes to SIBO, which is why it's helpful to know that. You can test your colon transit time. It's not the most glamorous way to do a test, but if you have some sweet corn and then time how long it takes for you to see that sweet corn in the toilet, then you're going to know what your colon transit time is. And again, that might give you a better understanding of whether you are methane or hydrogen dominant when it comes to SIBO, if that is a factor for you. Now, I can't not mention the ileocecal valve when it comes to SIBO. It's a one-way valve which is located between the small intestine and the large intestine, and its primary function is really to regulate the flow of contents from the small intestine to the large intestine. And when people have an issue with this valve, they often have pain on the right-hand side under their ribs. So if that's a pain that you've been experiencing, especially after eating, then it might be worth looking into this, because the valve needs to close in order to keep the bacteria in the large intestine, which is what I mentioned earlier. And if that valve isn't closing properly, then that again can cause the bacteria to get into the wrong place and cause SIBO. And there are a number of reasons for that, but one of the reasons could be linked to your nervous system. So it's not always as clear cut as, oh, there's something going on in the gut. This could be linked to the brain as well. And if you have any other nerve dysfunction or neurological issues, then you may also have gut issues, because the gut and brain is very much interlinked. And if those valves aren't closing properly because there's some nervous system dysfunction, then that may be the cause of SIBO. And that's worth looking into as well. Because there is a thing called the migrating motor complex, often referred to as MMC, and that helps the proper functioning of the ileocecal valve. And the thing about the migrating motor complex is it helps to clean the small intestine every time we eat. So it's really important, and it's dependent on our nervous system, but it's also dependent on us having long breaks from food. So if you're anything like I used to be when I used to work in an office, I would have some drawers in my desk, would have nuts in it, and when just throughout the day I would be constantly grazing on these nuts, and I used to get those graze boxes actually, so I'd just be grazing all day long. So my migrating motor complex just wouldn't be able to work because I was constantly eating. And really to have this system to kick in where it, as I said, it cleans up the small intestine, which is what you want to happen, so you don't have these bacteria in the wrong place. In order for that to happen, you really need to go at least 2 to 3 hours without eating. So at least that. And if you're having these symptoms, I would try to go for 4 to 5 hours between each meal if you can. And you might want to incorporate some intermittent fasting, but obviously just work with your blood sugar regulation and how you feel when you are fasting. When I say fasting, I mean eating in a shortened eating window rather than any kind of extreme fasting. And I would ordinarily leave it about 14 hours a day where I'm not eating. And that seems to work for me. I don't do it every day, but I do it most days. The other thing to consider is the link between SIBO and autoimmune disease. And the truth is, when you have SIBO, you're more likely to have maldigestion, and malabsorption of key nutrients. And that in and of itself can contribute to autoimmune disease, because we know that autoimmune conditions can be caused by nutrient deficiencies, and that can cause dysregulation of the immune system. So that in and of itself can cause autoimmunity, especially in those who are predisposed. But secondly, there is a specific autoimmune condition which targets that nerve, which is extremely important in the migrating motor complex. So when we have damage to that nerve and the cells called the interstitial cells of Cajal, which is almost like the pacemaker cells of the small intestine, they get damaged as part of an autoimmune response. And it means that that migrating motor complex function can't work optimally. And as a result of that, that means that we are more likely to have those bacteria come up through the valve. And it's worth knowing whether this is a factor for you, because your approach is going to be different if it's related to an autoimmune disease. So the root cause of your SIBO is an autoimmune condition, then you will take a different approach when it comes to natural therapies and things that you will do to help it, because you're going to follow more of a autoimmune focused approach if that's the cause. And the interesting thing about this autoimmune condition that is linked to SIBO is that they have found that there is this thing called cross-reactivity with a common stomach bug that you might pick up. So if you have had a really bad bout of food poisoning and then you developed SIBO, it might be an indication that you have this autoimmune driven process in your body which is causing that SIBO. So if you had food poisoning or traveler's diarrhea and then you suddenly develop SIBO and you can't get rid of it, then it might be worth looking into that. And the Cyrex arrays that I mentioned in last week's Friday 5 actually do a specific test on this, so you can test yourself to see if you have these autoantibodies which might be contributing to your SIBO. Now, one of the things that a lot of people try when they have SIBO is a low FODMAP diet, because a low FODMAP diet helps to remove those fermentable carbohydrates that I mentioned at the beginning that feed the bacteria and stimulate them to produce the gases that then cause those SIBO symptoms. So it's a good way to help with your symptoms in that moment in time. And it can help to kill off some of the bacteria because you're not feeding them anymore. But the truth is, you end up being on this restricted low FODMAP diet for a long, long time. And it depends on the cause how long you need to be on that low FODMAP diet. The best case scenario is that you are able to find out what is causing the SIBO in the first place, to address that and then bring in these foods slowly to make sure that they don't cause the bloating and gas anymore. Because the truth is, when we are in that bloated and gassy state, that can cause inflammation. It can lead to leaky gut syndrome, which we know is a risk factor in autoimmune disease. So it is important to keep the gases low and to do anything that we can to bring down that bloating, which is why the low FODMAP diet can help for a certain amount of time. But because you are removing some really beneficial foods, it's best to not stay on a low FODMAP diet for too long unless you really need to, which is why it's worth getting to the root of it. The other thing that can be very helpful with SIBO is a thing called butyrate, which is a short chain fatty acid, which is produced by certain beneficial gut bacteria. And these short chain fatty acids contribute to digestive health in many ways. They have a crucial role in maintaining gut health. They help provide an energy source for the cells in the lining of the colon, and they just generally promote that healthy anti-inflammatory environment in the gut. And what can happen is, when somebody has SIBO, is that they can end up with a very low amount of short chain fatty acids, which is why one of the therapeutic approaches might be to include a direct source of butyrate. And one of those direct sources could be ghee. Ghee is full of butyrate, but obviously you've just got to be mindful if you have any issue consuming dairy. It does have much less lactose in it, but it does still have some casein, so you may have a reaction to it if you have a problem with dairy. But that would be a direct source of butyrate, and there are supplements that are available with butyrate. As normal, I'm not suggesting that you take them, and always work with a health practitioner if you are thinking about taking any supplements, but it might be worth considering because it could give you relief from your symptoms in the short term whilst you work on the root cause of the issue. Now, the vagal nerve is a key piece of this. That's that nerve between our brain and our gut. And there are various ways that you can exercise it to make it stronger and help to prevent small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Sometimes it can be due to our muscles just not being strong enough. And that's where these vagal nerve exercises can really help. So exercises such as deep breathing exercises, which are obviously very helpful for our minds as well. And, you know, just taking some moments out of the day to calm our nervous system. But other exercises like gargling and even vocal exercises can help stimulate the vagus nerve. And I've been meaning to pick up my singing for a while. I had a break from singing after being in a choir, and I'd love to pick it up again. And actually, when I start discussing subjects like this, I realise, yeah, I need to get back into my singing. I enjoy it. And also it has this huge benefit of exercising my vagal nerve, which has an impact on my gut health. Because your vagus nerve not only promotes proper digestive function, but it helps with the regulation of stomach acid production, which we know is an important factor here, and to help stimulate that migrating motor complex. One of the things that you can do to help stimulate your vagal nerve is to gargle. So that activates muscles at the back of the throat, which are actually connected to the vagus nerve. So you can gargle, you know, twice a day, and that's going to be a really good way for you to exercise your vagus nerve. So that's just something to maybe try yourself. It doesn't always have to be about food and diet. And I just want to emphasize that actually SIBO, if you start to develop it and you haven't had it before, can be a sign of other conditions like irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, and celiac disease. So if you start to develop it, it might be worth, you know, speaking to your doctor, understanding what the cause may be, because there might be other things that you need to consider doing. It might not just be as easy, or I'm not saying it's easy to address SIBO, it really isn't, but it might not just be as simple as there's bacteria in the wrong place in the gut. There might be more to it. I've spoken about the direct link between SIBO and autoimmune disease, but there's also the fact that SIBO can have a broader effect on our whole health, to be honest, and in particular our immune system, because it can cause maldigestion. When we have SIBO and we have an excessive amount of bacteria, it can lead to maldigestion because of the fermentation of these key nutrients is happening in the small intestine, and that's preventing their proper absorption into our body. So you may find that if you have SIBO, one, you're not able to put on weight, but then when you do a test, you find that you're nutrient deficient, even though you feel like you're eating a fairly good diet. And the reason for that could be SIBO in and of itself. So by addressing the SIBO, you can also address your nutrient deficiencies, and you will end up getting more value from the food that you're buying and eating. That's how I always see it. I want my digestion to be as good as it can be so that I get, you know, the nutrients from the food that I'm eating, because I'm spending a lot of money on good quality food. So I want to make sure that it's going to the right place. So today we have discussed lots of different aspects when it comes to SIBO. If you are having any symptoms of SIBO, then firstly, speak to your doctor to understand if there is anything underlying that might be causing it, and then feel free to reach out to me or speak to another healthcare practitioner about what you might be able to do with natural therapies. And I also offer my gut health testing package, which I'll put a link to in the show notes, because if you have these symptoms, it's worth looking into what is actually happening in your gut. And then hopefully, once you address those imbalances that you find in your gut, you will hopefully see your SIBO symptoms improve. And, you know, on top of that, bringing in those vagal exercises can be huge, especially if it's to do with weaknesses in that particular area that are contributing to SIBO. That can have a huge effect on your health just by implementing those very, you know, small exercises or enjoyable exercises like singing into your life. It doesn't just bring you enjoyment, but it's also going to have huge benefits to your gut health as well. If you have any questions about SIBO or anything else related to autoimmune disease and gut health, feel free to reach out to me on my Instagram account, which is at The Autoimmunity Nutritionist. You can also join my free group on Facebook, The Autoimmune Forum. I would love to see you over there. And also pop over to my website and see some of the services that I offer, which is www.theautoimmunitynutritionist.com. Actually, all the resources are over on my website. I'll also put a link to that in the show notes. But I love to hear from you, so keep in touch. And if not, have a wonderful day, and I will speak to you soon. Take care. Thank you very much for joining me today on the Autoimmune Reset. I really hope you enjoyed the discussion, and be sure to subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. And if you liked it, I would hugely appreciate a review on iTunes, as it helps me understand what you like about the podcast and to help share the information with more people. I'm excited to speak to you next time. And remember, you have the power to take the reins on your health. So keep the faith and celebrate the small wins. Until next time.